You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
In Victoria's northwestern region, covering key areas such as Mildura and Swan Hill, the Mallee District Aboriginal Services, MADAS as it's more commonly known, operates crucial health and wellbeing services to thousands of First Nations people. During the COVID Delta outbreak, the MADAS team, led by its CEO, Palawa woman Jackie Turfrey, didn't hesitate to protect community, even bucking state government guidelines when it deemed necessary. Jackie joins me today. Jackie, welcome and thanks for joining me on NITV Radio.
Thank you very much, Charles.
Jackie, a little bit of background. Mallee District Aboriginal Services covers a huge area, 200 staff, providing services to a potential client base of 5,000. During COVID, there were obviously massive problems that you experienced. And as of mid-October, the Federal Health Department reported that around 90% of the greater Mildura area, the population had been vaccinated. Now, this was only about a month ago. In the Aboriginal community, it was significantly less than 90%. What was the state of the poll back then?
So the statistical data we had available to us at the commencement of the outbreak was around 54 to 56% of the Aboriginal community vaccinated, and that was single dose. It was much lower than that for double dose. So we were tracking a long way behind the general population. The one thing I will say about the vaccination rates for the general population, though, is that MADAS actually contributed significantly to the high vaccination rates in Mildura. How that came about is that around, it was the end of July, we were able to negotiate with the state government a deal whereby we got unlimited supply of Pfizer available to us so that we could roll out a vaccination program. The issue for us was that there was fairly low uptake by our own community for those vaccinations, but none of the other health services in town had access to Pfizer at the time. So we actually set up a COVID clinic and we decided that the best protection we could give our mob up here was to go the herd immunity approach and open up our COVID vaccine clinic to the broader Mildura population.
And you did that quite successfully. You had drop-in for mob, and it was by booking for the general community. But still, you had that very low First Nations level. What was the main cause for that?
So, to tell you the truth, when they released AstraZeneca, we were one of the first ACOs to actually get access to that, and we had amazing uptake. So, obviously, this is at the time when it was limited to particular age groups. The issue there, of course, then became the muck-up with the AstraZeneca rollout, the blood clotting saga, and then the fear really set into community. So all of a sudden, where we had initial launch that was quite successful, honestly, community just stopped. And that was then what we call the vaccination hesitation kicked in. And that wasn't for people that take a particular view on the vaccination. It was just that whole muck-up is what I would call it on the AstraZeneca rollout. Yeah. That actually then it almost stopped. Even our elders then didn't want to get vaccinated at all until Pfizer was available. And it wasn't until we got access to the Pfizer, which was around the mid to late July, that we were able to then start picking up vaccination rates again. We had some people taking up the AstraZeneca, but just not very many.
You quoted as saying in the media that the mob in the general area were very scared. They were scared to come out of the house. They were scared to pass on the COVID, if they had it, onto other people, specifically the elders. Now, that seems to have been another reason to hold people back and keep those dose rates low. How has that changed in the community over the past month or so?
So our approach to vaccinations has changed. So what we've done is we've got to a point where we determined that our vaccination clinic had probably reached its maximum efficacy with our Aboriginal population, so with the mob. And we thought, well, we're going to have to change what we're doing and how we're doing it to get into people's homes. Because people were actually scared. So in the first week where we had our outbreak, and just to give you a sense of what that looked like for us, we had it announced on the Sunday, and I don't have the dates in front of me, so I can't quote that. But I think it was like the 7th of October. On the Sunday, there was one positive case in Merbein, non-Aboriginal person. By the Wednesday, in our own clinic, because we do rapid testing, we started picking up significant numbers of our own mob coming in for tests just out of concern because they had the sniffles and didn't feel very well. And we immediately became aware of the significant numbers of COVID cases in our own community, which coincided within days of that one case in Merbein. So the issue there for that week is that so the Wednesday and Thursday, significant jump, our community were really afraid. They were afraid to come out for people who didn't have it and didn't feel unwell. They were too afraid to leave their homes, go to the supermarkets or be out and about because they honestly believed they would catch it. So there was that fear. Then the fear was of people who had tested positive, you know, just that risk of passing it on to other people in community. And then the risk that if you pass it on to an elder who's not vaccinated and if they pass away, then you've got that shame on your shoulders.
For sure. Yeah.
So that really impacted people's willingness to come out and be moving to do anything, let alone come in for a vaccine. So we did our own contact tracing as well. So, you know, we're a lot more agile than government because we know who's coming in our door. We saw the positive test coming up, so we were able to then make telephone calls and say, can you come in for a test? Getting their family members in for testing, we could work out which family households or other households that they would have had contact with to a large extent, not completely, without actually asking the people who had tested positive per se about who have you been in contact with, where have you been and what have you done. We're able to work through who it was likely that they've come in contact with and actually get a lot more people coming through for testing.
How many mob in the Mildura area, or in Madass area, I should say, because it's much greater than Mildura, yep, of course, are you aware of that have actually been infected with COVID throughout the entire 18 months of the pandemic?
Over the entire 18 months, it's only in this last outbreak that we've had infections in community. So that's quite significant for us. It didn't feel quite real for everybody because it hasn't affected our community members until this time. But we had a couple of scares along the way. So we had on the last outbreak, the young man who came up from Melbourne to get his vaccine at our clinic, and then he subsequently tested positive for COVID. So that caused a little bit of distress around because obviously, you know, you've got someone who's come into the clinic. We were contacted by the Department of Health pretty quickly about that. That actually resulted in us having to lock our service down, but only for a really short period of time. Because we'd set up our clinic separate from any of our other operations, we've only had double vaccinated people working in our clinic. So that's been a requirement, full PPE, following all of the proper COVID social distancing and safety precautions and measures. It meant that the Department of Health were actually happy to open up our service much sooner than we were happy to do. So they gave us the all clear. We took a little bit more time because what we wanted to do was to test our other staff in the clinic who may have come into contact with, and that's our health clinic, with the people working in our COVID clinic, just to make sure so that our staff had peace of mind, our community had peace of mind that we'd actually were COVID free and were able to safely run our practice.
Jackie, your staff of 200 people have been under enormous pressure over the past several months. You've been quoted as saying that you have concerns for your staff in the medium term and even long term.
Yeah.
What are some of those concerns?
So the concerns are that my staff, because they are community members, they will take on much more than staff from any other service. Initially, they are a bit reluctant because they're afraid of getting COVID and passing it on to other people as well. But certainly after Darlene and myself donned the PPE and we actually walked the talk and went out and supported COVID-positive community members, staff really picked up their game, in my view, working really long hours, which is not ideal, but because we've got certain testing facilities and certain requirements and wait times, I had staff working from as early as 8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock of a night, 6 and 7 days a week. That's not good for staff over long term. You know, I'm really thankful that they did that for the shorter period. We've then had to manage that. We have to be mindful of that as we move forward.
Burnout's a real issue in these situations.
It really is. Most of my senior staff, including myself, had a 19-day period without a break at all. which is pretty tough going given the hours that we're working. So what we've just had to do is be really mindful of that and make staff take a bit of time off. Even the Monday between the weekend and Cup Day, I actually declared that a day off.
What are some of the learnings that you and MDAS in general have gained as a result of COVID, and specifically the last month or two?
So some of the learnings for me are that if you have to follow all of the rules and processes that are outlined by government, you'll get nowhere. You won't be able to actually chip into the problematic areas. So you actually have to be brave enough, but actually have good risk governance and management and clinical governance behind you to be brave enough to step outside of the box and to be innovative. And that's where the Koori Night Patrol concept came up, which was the in-home testing and vaccinating. So offering tests for people who didn't feel very well, but if people felt okay, then have a vaccine.
What are some of the examples that you may have where it's been important for MDAS and the community to step outside some of those government regulations and guidelines?
Yeah. So the testing and vaccinating at the same time out of the same service was one of those. We were able to have a great clinical team, and the government assisted in it. Once they realised we were going to do it anyway, they were very, very good at backing us. So they provided us with a couple of nurses, Aboriginal nurses. VACHO gave us their clinical governance fellow, and they came along and they were the ones that were implementing live time what it is that we're trying to deliver in community. Another option was housing. We could not get the emergency accommodation up here because CQV just aren't in town. You know, they're in Melbourne and metro areas and they're there to support the accommodation and the quarantine and the isolation. They weren't here. So every option we came up with to house our own mob when they were diagnosed as positive was rejected by government. So we just said, well, you know what, we've got our own properties that are vacant. We'll quickly fix them up. We'll say to the government, keep up with us essentially, but we're doing this and we're going to use it as a COVID isolation option for people who are positive. And quite frankly, the government got on board very fast at that time to ensure again that there's a good process and procedure and that we're following what the requirements for isolation looked like. But if we hadn't have done that, we wouldn't have had a solution very quickly at all.
Jackie Turfrey, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.